a few instructions. Sorry, this is. So remember that you are all in listen-only mode, but you have opportunity to use the chat to submit any questions or to share any thought at the same time as the webinar. We are recording this session, so and it will be made available to everyone. And also, I would like to remind everyone about our antitrust guideline. This is a policy of the LEED network to strictly comply with all applicable antitrust laws. And you know, as we do have employees from competing companies participating in today's webinar, we must ensure that we avoid any prohibited topics. So you can see them listed here. Please take a moment to read this information. And of course, if at any point in time of the webinar you feel uncomfortable, please raise it to us. Great, so I see the number still growing. Keep on growing. So welcome to this LEED Network event. Specifically to all our new members who are joining us for the first time today. I would like as well to take the opportunity to remind you about our mission. The LEED Supply Chain Network, you know, is to attract, retain, and advance women in the retail and consumer goods industry in Europe through education, leadership, and business development. So it's really our vision to have a diverse workforce where both men and women are unable to contribute to their full potential. And you can see that, you know, in this supply chain chapter, we have 16 committee members, and we are reaching, I think the latest numbers is over 2,500 members. So really exciting ones. And we see like, yeah, we have 46 of you today. Today, the topic that you have chosen to attend with us is the great opportunity to hear what have been the most successful action that some important organizations have put in place for pushing the gender balance in their supply chain organization. So today, you will hear some of the story, but you will have as well the opportunity to dialogue with three inspiring speakers. And I will be your moderator. So my name is Caroline Gilroll. I'm part of Mondelez International. I've been working there for more than 20 years. In my background is supply chain. And at the moment, I'm leading some strategic program within our supply chain, like transformation or integration. And I'm part of the LEED supply chain chapter since 2020 as part of the LEED event committee. Before I introduce our speakers, we would like to hear from you. So we have our first poll question, which we will ask you to answer. So from what supply chain function do you work in? And you have the choice here. Hopefully, you see enough choice that correspond to where you're coming from. And we'll give it a few minutes. So, what supply chain functions do you work in? And we have 60 people now. Stephanie, do we have the result? Okay, very good. So HR is in a leading position with the other function and even outside of supply chain, so perfect. And then customer service and logistics. So very broad mix of participation. Thank you so much. So it's time for me to introduce and our panelists today. So to start with, we have Cass Martin from Kimberly-Clark. Cass, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi everyone. I work for Kimberly-Clark, and for those of you that don't know the company, our brands include Andrex, Kleenex, Kotex and Huggies. I started my career in marketing and sales, but around 25 years ago, I saw the light and moved into supply chain. I've worked in a number of different supply chain functions, most recently in manufacturing, and I currently have responsibility for one UK factory and two in the Czech Republic. Nice to see you all.
Thank you. Then we have Claire Fallon from Mondelez International.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm Claire Fallon, and I'm currently working with Mondelez for just gone 3 years. I've recently just moved to Zurich into a new role. I joined Mondelez into a manufacturing role just over 3 years ago, where I looked after our plants in the Nordics and Baltics. So in wonderful locations such as Oslo, Stockholm and Kaunas in Lithuania. Before that, I spent over 20 years working for Procter & Gamble in many different parts of the supply chain between manufacturing, logistics and strategic roles. And I also took a bizarre career change where I spent 5 years working in a university, working behind the scenes in operations. So that's me. And I'm looking forward to interacting through the questions today.
Thank you, Claire. And finally, Joseph. From L'Occitane, and obviously we all love your creams and products.
Thank you. So I'm Joseph Gonzalo, Group Commercial Supply Chain Director for L'Occitane. Been working for the company for 9 years, and I'm in charge of the commercial supply chain of the group, and I'm based in Geneva. And before that, I've been working, I worked for Accenture, and also for Puig, also in perfume, in the perfume business. So that's me. I'm happy to speak today.
Thank you. So the approach today will be what we are proposing is that we will start by giving you an overview of the work done on the playbook and what is it, does it contain. Then we will interact with our guest speakers, and we will give you the opportunity at the end for a Q&A and also to explain, you know, the next steps on how to access the playbook. So let's get started, and I think Cass, everybody is quite impatient to hear more about this this playbook. So maybe you can describe the origin and what does it contain.
Absolutely. So if I think about our supply chain chapter within the LEAD network, we've always been very active, and we've held many webinars focused to sharing industry updates, sharing career stories, and always hearing the passion and commitment of those who are speaking. But it was following a session that we ran at the LEAD conference in October 2021, when we reflected that we've got to stop selling sunshine, got to stop presenting how good our organisations are. Yes, we're doing great stuff, you know, sharing the positives we've achieved and how great it is that our organisations have this on our agenda. But we really weren't offering anything that faced into the structural challenges holding back gender balance. Data was telling us, and we could see what was happening from our own organisations, that we were still some way off the pace in terms of making the gains we needed to see to address the underrepresentation of women in supply chain. But despite that reflection, we felt strongly that together we had the opportunity to address this more impactfully. And I'm really pleased to say that in 2022, we took steps to do just that. Representatives of 9 LEAD network partner organisations came together with open minds, ready to share the details of the initiatives that are making a difference to gender balance in their organisations, and then bring those together in a best practices playbook. And our mantra was collaboration, not competition. We're all in this together. We should stop fighting over competing for limited talent and work together to ensure that we've got a strong pipeline of women considering supply chain as a career and sticking with it. We move on to the next slide. As a group, we agreed that we would build the playbook around what we call the employee life cycle. And what we mean by that is all the way from attracting candidates to apply for jobs in our organizations through to their eventual offboarding when they move on to a new opportunity. And rather than a dry list of best practices, we focused our efforts to developing highly relatable scenarios to guide the reader through each stage of the employee life cycle. And the best practices that we shared from our organisations directly inform the scenarios that we use, And as we close each section of the playbook, we have real world testimony from senior leaders telling us how and why the best practices are working in their organisation. So we're really bringing it to life. I think in sort of summarising what we're doing with the playbook, equally importantly to all of the good detail, the playbook contains a glossary of terms explaining what some of the diversity and inclusion terminology means, and also very importantly seeks to remove any anxiety that we might feel, and I know I feel it at time, and we try to do the right thing, we don't want to take a misstep, so that's an important part of the playbook as well. Thanks, Caroline.
Yes, it's very rich and practical playbook that that has been put together. So really well done. And Joseph, maybe we'll start with you because L'Occitane has been part of a of this collection of best practice. So maybe you can share with us one of those and also where L'Occitane is in its DE&I journey, right?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So, well, here you can see an overview of the key data for L'Occitane. So we are a retail company, production, distribution of cosmetics. And you can see that we have 9,000 staff worldwide, and we have a very 87% female workforce. So that's highly driven by retail, but not only. So actually, we're quite advanced compared to many other companies in the industry. And so we have 50% of women in key management positions. And you can see here that we have 43% on the executive committee, 55% among executives, and 64% of managers are women. So it's quite good, but you can see how numbers drop when we get to the top management. So there's where we have still a challenge to move forward. So one of the policies that I think has made a big difference for L'Occitane has been the worldwide parental leave, which is a policy that's implemented 3 years ago. And it meant that primary caregivers would have 20 weeks fully paid leave everywhere in the world, which that, I mean, for us Europeans might not make a big difference, but in Asia and Americas, that's a huge impact. And it also means that women can follow an international career, knowing that wherever they go, they will have the same maternity leave benefits. And so that that frees a little bit the career path for women in the company. And also secondary caregivers, usually it's men, but could be different in case of LGBT couples. They have 12 weeks of fully paid leave, also worldwide. So that has made a huge difference also on the experience in terms of feeling the first weeks of the newborn, because usually in many countries there's very little parental leave. So the man goes back to work and women are stuck with the baby and have to with a new experience. And it's a very difficult moment for in life, beautiful but difficult. And so this possibility to have this parental leave that's both for men and women has really been a game changer. And here we have the feedback from a person that had experienced that. And in this case, it was both were working at L'Occitane. So the experience was even more rich because both could experience that parental leave together and have and profit that beautiful family moment. And you will see on the right, there's a picture of Clarice Kremer, who's a sailor that did the Last Vendée Globe, that is an individual race around the world. And she did it in 22 and then decided to have a baby. And the sponsor she had decided to drop her because the sponsor thought that she would not be competitive for the race of 2024 because she needs some training and some qualifying races. L'Occitane decided to sponsor her to go ahead to the 2024 race. So this is a kind of putting sponsorship, showing, you know, the parental leave policy is showing inside and outside the organization that having a baby should not be a blocking for your career. That's, I think, a strong message outside of the organization and also inside. We have seen one of the benefits of the parental leave is that for any new position in the group or any promotion, men and women are facing the same challenges. Maybe they will have a baby. Maybe there will be some months off, but this is kind of leveling the ground. So men now have to accept new positions and be disclose that they're going to have a baby in the same way that women have experienced that in the past. And so it's a, I think it's a levels the ground, and it's a great way to make also men understand what it is to have a hiatus in your career because you have a newborn baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, very nice, Joseph. And yeah, well done to L'Occitane for the sponsorship of Clarisse Kremer. It's a very nice story.
Thank you.
Moving to Mondelez International, and Claire, you have with your manufacturing background, and also we know that it's important for Mondelez to play on that field. So be great if you can explain to us as well a few things that has been put in place.
Sure. Thank you, Caroline. I have to start by saying I've been with Mondelez now for 3 years, and I'm very excited by the energy, both of the leadership and of our top CEO in really trying to drive this agenda. So I think that's probably one of the things that is really beneficial in any company, is having that support around you or that top level direction saying this is important and this is what we're going to do. So within Mondelez, we're progressing quite well. You can see some of the stats on the right hand side. One of our key aims is to make sure that we reach 40% of women in our leadership teams, and that's the MLT plus one, by 2030, and we're well on track for that at the moment. Like most companies, you can see variations between the gender balance, both at entry level right the way through to board directors. So again, that's something that we're very conscious of and that we have to continue to make a difference in. But let me maybe start with a little bit about Mondelez itself. So we are a snacking company with a clear mission to lead the future of snacking. You probably know us more by the brands that you have in your cupboards and that you reached for with your cup of tea or at any time of the day. So household names and iconic brands like Dairy Milk or Oreos or Milka or Philadelphia. And we also pride ourselves in being the taste of the nation in quite a number of different markets. For me, one very close to my heart is Marabou, which is the taste of the nation in Sweden. We have approximately 91,000 talented employees delivering our vision day in, day out. And again, just to give an idea of what Mondelez stands for and what we've been doing in 2022, you can really see that we have actively put gender balance at the front of our eyes. We've done quite a lot of direct action. So we've had a new female board of directors added in 2022. We continue to host things like annual Women in Leadership conferences to really drive both the behaviours and the change in culture that we need. And we've got a very strong mentoring programme. We've run that for the third time last year. So overall, very excited to be part of this journey and really seeing where we're going to go as a company over the next year. One of the things that most companies face when they're on this journey is that we can really get women into quite a lot of different areas within the company, but it's quite hard within supply chain. So, and within supply chain, it's even harder from a manufacturing perspective. So it's something we've been very consciously working on for the past couple of years. So I thought it would be useful to maybe share some of the practices that we have been putting in place as we tackle this journey. And we've broken it down into three areas. First being, how do we make sure that we have the right environments in places like our plants and DCs to make sure that we are making the right choices in every aspect of that journey, as Kath described it at the start with our playbook. So very first thing we've had to do is make sure that we have equipped and educated our plant leadership team on the right behaviours and really opened their eyes to what's going on. And we've done a number of different initiatives, things like what we called a 10-day challenge. So every day just educating our teams with different scenarios around gender and diversity and what that looks like in reality. We've also been running dedicated culture of belonging training sessions with our teams, again, to get them to think about what it means overall and what changes they can be doing locally to really make a difference. And we've specifically included it as an objective in everyone's yearly objectives that we set. So there must be a DEI annual objective in there. So very personal and very specific to how you can help make a difference. So that's how we set and create the right environment and culture and drive. That's the first area. The second area we went after was really, how do we utilize the brilliance and the ideas that we have within our organizations already? So we set up a very active network of ambassadors, and they will regularly share experiences of what's going on with them, both good and bad. And we celebrate where we have made differences. We have DEI Connects, and what we do with that group of ambassadors is use them as a sounding board for best practices and as we develop things moving forward. And then finally, in that area, we have a specifics team space. So this is where we make sure that we have an area where people can ask questions, share, celebrate, etc. And what those two things are now giving us the opportunity to do is identify small changes that can make a big difference in people's daily lives. And we're finding out how we can then cross-populate those between plants. So for example, making sure that we have period and menopause kits available in plants. So that's an initiative that started in one of our plants and is now growing across the network. You know, for those that work in manufacturing, when you've got your uniform on, there's not very much space for you to be storing things on a day-to-day basis. So you need access when you need access to these things. So that's been a big thing that we want to drive. The second is changes to workwear and PPE. I know whenever I was pregnant and had to put on my workwear, I ended up putting on large men's gear, and that's not great from a safety or quality perspective, and it doesn't really help you feel the way you need to feel. So we've got to look at how do we get the right workwear between men and women, but also for different stages of life. Things like PPE, we all in manufacturing wear hairnets. Some of us with more hair than others, the hairnets can sometimes rip, not be so fragile. So how do we make sure we bring the appropriate PPE into our plants to make sure that we're able to comply when we need to? And very finally, close to my heart, is when we design new production equipment. How do we influence that when we put in, control panels, access to safety gear, the ability to open doors, load labels, etc.? Are we thinking about that from a gender perspective? So how do we influence our engineers and other companies who are designing our equipment? So that's just a flavor of things that we've been working specifically from a manufacturing perspective and supply chain. And hopefully that's given people on the call maybe some insights, but maybe opportunities to reapply.
Yes, thank you, Claire. Yeah, sometimes very practical and very tiny things are changing the perception. So that's really nice to hear. So we've heard some very nice stories about more the retaining women in the industry. Cass, from the playbook, were there any other best practices that we could share, maybe on the recruitment part, looking at this cycle? Yeah,
absolutely. And just to talk about the playbook again, one of the themes we really hope comes across strongly is that none of this is rocket science. As with most things in life, if we apply a little bit of common sense and think about how we would feel if treated in a certain way, then we can usually find a workable way forward. And thinking about recruitment, a couple of themes that we touch on in the recruitment section of the playbook are ensuring you have a recruitment checklist and also that you use inclusive language in your job adverts, because you want to be sure that you're taking all the right steps so that women are not only motivated to apply when you see your advert, but equally importantly, that when you or others in your organisation engage with the candidate directly, for example, when they're being interviewed, they can see and feel how your team can be a meaningful career destination for them. So a checklist is a great way to ensure that you are consciously considering every step that you take in the recruitment process. And for example, something that we have implemented in the UK with our checklist for recruitment is the first item being what percentage of flexible working can be accommodated in the role. And in manufacturing, this is a big deal because historically it's always been felt you can't have any sort of flexibility. But by actively asking that question and challenging some of the assumptions around it, we're making sure that hiring managers are considering this, not ignoring it, and then we can reference directly in the job advert. Because if you see that there is an element of flexibility, surely you're going to be thinking, hang on a minute, this could work for me. Whereas traditionally, some of the manufacturing roles has been an immediate barrier for those with caring responsibilities or looking for some other type of balance in their lives. Using inclusive language in job adverts is an absolute must, and we've shared a couple of examples here on the slide to give you a sense of how moving away from being overly specific with your requirements can make those roles feel more accessible. And this is particularly important to female candidates who unfortunately can typically self-select out of a process because they worry that they can't tick every box. So, I mean, this is just one little snippet out of the playbook. There's so much more richer information in there, but just wanted to give you a flavour of this type of insights and very accessible tools that you can consider and utilise going forward.
Yeah. Now, again, small things making a big difference. And if we go back to you, Josep, on the objective of L'Occitane, is there other practices and that have pushed the gender diversity and also that you have benefited at L'Occitane?
Yes, thank you, Caroline. Yes, there is the policy of remote work that was implemented right after the pandemic. There was already some kind of remote work policy in different markets, but after the pandemic, it became obvious that it was possible to work remotely and it was efficient. And it was decided to have, a worldwide policy that means 2 days per week it's possible to work remotely for people to have full time and then a minimum of 3 days a week from the office. And this has been also a game changer because this facilitates flexibility is, as you can see below, it is one of the key elements cited by women to change jobs. So clearly that extra flexibility is very much appreciated by everyone, for sure. But women have a tendency to need to require more flexibility. And these 2 days a week working from home has allowed for that. And that's been a really game changer for the company. We have already, I mentioned here, 14% of women in the offices work part-time compared to 5% of men. So that tells us also there's inside the company, there's a need, higher need for flexibility arrangements for women than for men. And this possibility to work 2 days a week has allowed for that. You can see on the right also that this is out of the McKinsey Woman in the Work report from last year, that a lot more women are likely to work remotely. So that has this policy also levels the ground also in terms of international mobility. Wherever you go, you know, you can expect that kind of policy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good. And actually, there is a question from your previous best practice about parental leave. And Céline is asking, how do you encourage men to take the time off? And do you have already, you know, how many men to take advantage of that?
Absolutely. Every man has taken that, as far as I know. And even on the executive level, they've taken the time off. So, yes, some at the very executive level has postponed it. So maybe not exactly because of working reasons. They were not taking it right at the day the baby was born, but they were eventually taking it. So it's been respected by everyone. I don't know of any man who has not taken that. It's encouraged by the company to take it and even to take it as soon as the baby is born. So yes.
Mm-hmm. Working well. Okay. So please carry on putting your question in the chat and we will we'll take them on the flow and we still, you know, have time to answer some of them. Actually, Claire, there's one about what you described earlier about the 10-day challenge for the leadership teams mm-hmm. in the plan. Could you describe it a bit more?
Yeah, sure. So the way we operated the 10-day challenge, it was set up not to be very time consuming, but to trigger thoughts every day. So so once a day, every day for 10 working days, you would receive an email in the morning. And it would contain maybe a small video or a small article to get your thoughts going and provoke you on your perception. So, and it would take maybe 2 to 3 minutes each day. So one day it might be on allyship, you know, so how have you created or acted like an ally today? Another one might be a short video on blind spots. So have you thought about X, Y, and Z. Did you, you know, do this today? So there were short things to keep prompting you each day and hopefully have an influence on your behaviors and start to build up those changes in you. So it was 10 different topics that we would just basically drip feed out over a period of time. People have really enjoyed them and have been asking for more. So we've been creating another 10-day challenge, for example, with maybe slightly deeper topics or slightly different topics. And what's been fantastic is that has started to grow organically. So when we started it small, people then started taking those challenges and feeding them on to their team. So it's been growing and growing. And it's been a really great interactive tool. And then at the end of the 10-day challenge, we would get the plant teams to talk about what they learned or things that had stuck in their minds and what could we start to do differently in their organization. Hopefully that helps a little bit.
Yes, awesome. Super good. So let's move to Q&A, and I see some question in the chat again about remote working. So what would be, I don't know who wants to take this one, but can you share what is the interest of enforcing 3 days in the office if remote working allows better flexibility? Do we show that that was like even too much 3 days? So I don't know if Joseph, you want to take that one.
Yes, I can take that one. So I think this is an evolution. So when I joined the company 9 years ago, there was zero home office days. So before the pandemic, 3 years before, there was 1 day off and 1 day home office, but with a lot of caveats. You know, there was like a lot of fear from the management. So perceptions have evolved. Management has evolved, and of course we show that actually we can achieve more by working remotely sometimes, because for people that works with different time zones, being at home is a game changer. But there's also the feeling that being sharing in an office, there's things that happen that are not possible only working remotely. So the company found that arrangement that was a kind of a balance. But yeah, in the future, maybe that will evolve to more home office. But for the moment, we got to that level.
All right, thanks. And Claire, what do you think, like from the playbook, like some of the company could learn from it, and what could they do more?
What was really interesting for me from the playbook was reminding and refreshing on employee branding. So I thought that was really interesting because we do it for our brands. Okay, and we're very good at thinking about how our brands connect with people and how they connect with consumers. And we've been doing an awful lot of work in Mondelez around, have we got the right reflection of society in those brands, and are we actually reflecting reality? For me, it's now, and we've moved that over a little bit into employee branding now, and I want us to continue to do much more in that. You know, we have to attract different people to get better results and to relate to our consumers better. So we need to have that connection with our future employees. So the way we connect with consumers, how do we connect better with employees? So, you know, Kath shared some wonderful examples on the checklist as well, saying, have you advertised in the right place? Have you used the right language, and et cetera, et cetera? Are our pictures diverse on our posters? So really taking that and thinking about it more. So that was one of my learnings.
Yes, it's important to show the image of a company who's focusing on D&I. But also, I think there's a question, and maybe Kath, you can this one is even internally, how do you get colleagues involved in more involved in the D&I agenda? It could be a trendy topic, but on the other hand, you know, every day everybody is super busy, and how do we can you attract and make sure that this topic is taken seriously internally?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a really good question. And, you know, behind some of the reluctance is a feeling of threat. And I think the best way to get into the shoes of maybe some of our male colleagues on this topic is think about another minority group of which we are not a part. For example, say the Black Lives Matter in my case, that fear of saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing. So I think the concept of allyship is really important. And that is where we give people the tools to understand how things are for another group. And by enabling that understanding and removing that sense of threat, it allows for those people to feel far more comfortable being an advocate and having a more active voice. So I think the concept of allyship and LEAD Network have some really good materials on this available on their website, but we also touch on it in the playbook in some detail. When the playbook is available, I'd like to suggest it's got some really useful use scenarios. So for many of us on a call, we'll probably consider ourselves believers. We understand why this is important to drive diversity into our team. So the playbook will be great in terms of additional stimulus with lots of initiatives and approaches you can adopt. For those of us on the call who aren't really sure how to get involved and make positive steps forward, it's a great way to get yourself grounded. So sharing the playbook with colleagues who you know want to help, but just perhaps don't know how to help, it's a really good tool. And then finally, there are going to be many of us on this call who are simply struggling to get any sort of traction on this topic with leaders in our organization. And the playbook is a great resource to say, please read this and then discuss with them, or indeed direct them to certain chapters, and the scenarios we have can really help build that wider understanding as to how many potentially great employees are just put off and don't even engage with the organisation, and that prevents our organisations being able to react more creatively to problem solving and bring different mindsets to really take our organisations forward. So I hope the playbook will help, particularly where we've got those sceptical colleagues, but this concept of allyship I think is absolutely critical.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But we saw good results already in some companies, like in Mondelez, Claire, you shared that already 40% of women on executive level. Do you know what was the key driver there to manage to be there?
I think there's a couple of things. And actually, Paulette Alvizi, our chief people officer, said it very recently. We're a company that if you want something done, you put a measure in front of people and you go for it. So I think it has to be front and center. It's not something you should shy away for. It's a, you know, if you want to do something, let's measure it. Okay, so that's one. I think the fact that our CEO is heavily engaged and driving for this and making it almost a deliverable of every function, you know, it's important for us to drive results. So that visibility and that support is there. I think a couple of things that we talked about is, you know, it's a company that people want to work for. So how do we make sure we attract the right people and we are attracting that diverse gender in as well? We're not perfect. We've still got a long way to go. And if you look at the different numbers, like most companies, you can start to hire in and bring people in and get the right diverse portfolio at the top. And you can change some of your practices to bring more people in from an entry level. But you have to keep working on your policies in the middle. Because that's when most companies tend to lose people. So I think we've done some great things, but we have to keep going because, you know, we haven't fixed it. We're not there. We're not there systemically. We're going to be talking about this agenda for years and years and years still to come. Yes. So I think it's good, but we've got to get there.
I think it was something that they were sharing internally, that you need still like a 5 hiring of women versus a man if we want to get to that gender balance at some point. So there's still some work to be done. But the same for you, Joseph, in L'Occitane. This is you are already at a high level in this executive level, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what we have a quite high percentage of women in executive positions. And I think what helps is that there's a lot of managers, as you were saying, 64% of managers are women. So there's a kind of a pipeline of talent that naturally helps that people grow in the organization from the bottom, getting to top managing positions. So that is definitely a key element. What is difficult, and I think I've shared that when we discussed in the playbook, is how our responsibility as leaders to make our teams want to have our job. So I think what I have experienced is that have some women that have not accepted more senior positions in organizations because they felt that it was not for them. And that is because as directors or top managers, we are showing that it's not a healthy, balanced work-life. And that is something that puts off some people from taking more leadership positions, having all the talent necessary. So that's something that we have the responsibility to maybe think about how much effort that we put in our work and how much is it considered in the company as a standard, having a director role. Mm-hmm. Another element is that I don't know of any director who's part-time. And as we were seeing before, 14% of women in the company are part-time. And so the fact that almost no directors are part-time, that also limits the pathway of evolution inside the company. So some things need to change still.
Yeah. No, it's great to hear it from a director, and maybe a side question of the playbook, but something that comes often in the mind of women, and maybe either Cass or Claire, as you really like had an impressive career. What would you give as an advice to women if they really want to step up, but are a bit fearing what Josep is describing about the hours and the dedication versus your personal life? How did it work for you?
It's an interesting one, because I think the reality is you find stress and tension at every level of your career. The types of items you're focused to as you make your progression through your career change, and so the types of demands become different. I think the key thing really is just recognize the value you bring as an individual. And however many barriers are put in your way, and believe you me, there are many, and often they make you question who you are and how you work. Stay true to that, because that's what makes you special. And that often is what is missing in my mind in some of our supply chain functions, is that diversity of thought, diversity of style, and you can bring insights and a different perspective. So hold on to that, but also recognize the way that we typically do our jobs at all levels of our career. We're very committed, and I would suggest that the tensions, the stresses might feel a little bit different, but they don't fundamentally change. So if you're being successful in your role and you have energy and can see a role that is interesting at a higher level, go for it, because you will bring something special. I don't know how you feel about that, Claire, but that's certainly my experience.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just the type of challenge changes. I think we shouldn't kid ourselves, though, that everything's going to be perfect and you're going to run a really simple 9-to-5 job and you will, walk out of work and forget about everything that's happened. You know, that would be wonderful, but I think it tends to be people in supply chain, want to succeed all the time. So you are going to have that level of stress. I would say, though, if you want that job, go for it. Okay, so go for it. But talk with the your new manager about how they can help make you even more successful, right? And they're important words, even more, not how can I be successful at this role. It's I can be even more successful, by making sure I've got a good, balance. I will be going to pick up my children, and this could be men or women, at a certain time. I will be doing something else to make up, but it's about getting the job done, not the hours put in. So that's typically one of the barriers that people see as you move up. They think you have to be, present 24/7, and therefore you can't do other things. So for me, that was one of the personal things I did. I always, as a plant director at one stage, I left at 4 o'clock to go and pick up my son when he was newborn. But then I figured out with all the other stresses that come, maybe I did something a bit later on, but talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there was someone asked earlier about how can men support, men in work need to think about what impact are they having on others, but think about what way would they want their wife or their daughter or their mother to be treated in that scenario themselves. So flipping your brain around to what would it do to somebody close to you, but rambling on a bit, but coming back to it, ask, talk about how can I be even more successful by making tweaks and changes that, your boss might not even know that you want at that next level that could help you.
Yeah. Nice, thank you, Claire. And well, I think one another interesting one about, you know, sometimes there have been some resistance. Even so, you know, you are sharing those nice stories. Did you face some resistance or obstacles by trying to scale up this agenda? So maybe, yeah, Joseph, in L'Occitane, have you experienced that?
I think L'Occitane is quite open. You know, there's a high percentage of women already in the workforce, so I haven't had the experience of difficulty implementing this. Sometimes I've seen some policies that could be improved, like how was the bonuses taken into account for women that had that were on parental leave before the group parental leave was implemented. So how can we make sure that we evaluate, you know, when someone is out for a part of the year, how do we evaluate it properly, the results versus the time they have had? Because it used to be an issue for women. Now that L'Occitane has applied this parental leave, it is on both men and women. So that was one of the areas where I think HR needed to be more clear on how do we evaluate people that have been only part of the year on a role due to parental leave. But in general, I've seen a very positive, not a lot of roadblocks on L'Occitane to implement these policies.
Mm-hmm. And in Kimberly Clark, Kath?
I think the biggest challenge actually isn't organisationally as such or the corporation, but it's individual points of failure, and something that I'm conscious of, not just in the area of diversity, but also when you've got any sort of new initiative, making sure that your organisation is mature enough in its approach such that if you've got a particularly resistant individual, they aren't the reason it will be successful or fail. So making sure that it's visible what you're doing. It helps having the objectives, as Claire said there, you know, if we're measuring it, then it becomes important and people aren't going to get their bonuses or successfully meeting expectations if this is a gap. Another item is it can be very easy to answer quite lazily, oh, you know, can't be bothered. There aren't enough women out there. You know, there aren't enough engineers. There aren't, you know, based on, I've spoken to family members, there's no way they'd want to work in a factory because of the heavy lifting, all of these sort of myths. So being able to break through them. But some work that we've done recently in Kimberly Clark is actually some independent research looking at where we've got our factories and looking at other organisations, how are they doing on gender balance? And we've had some really quite shocking data that shows in a site where we've got very low representation, factories just down the road, through the actions they're taking, have got very good representation. So use of data, not allowing there to be single points of failure and making it something that everybody can feel bought into is really important.
Mm-hmm. And now that we have this tool available with those, exactly, the playbook and these best practices, so what will you suggest on how will you suggest the, each of the company and our members to use this playbook?
Well, as I was saying before, you know, there are some people that are already bought into the cause, so this is additional stuff that you can use in your organization to add to what you're already doing. It's a great tool to help bring others along on the journey with you, give them confidence that this isn't anti-men but more about bringing richness into our teams. And then in those very difficult situations where you have particularly resistant leaders, this is a great conversation starter, and the fabulous scenarios that have been developed means that surely there'll be something that resonates, be it they've got a son or a daughter, or they've got some recollection of something happening. You know, there's a lot to hold on to and grab onto and find the commonalities and a way to get other people bought in. So we're really hopeful that you'll find this playbook to be very accessible, practical, and an enabler to move things on in your own organisation.
So I get the question now is, how, when will it be available fully? How will you make it available?
Yeah, so it's just in the final stages of preparation, as you can imagine, pulling all of this together, ensuring that all of the contributing organisations are comfortable, don't feel that we've missed anything out, and the tone is as it expects. So we've been doing a lot of work to finalise it, and it will be published in the coming weeks. So not long to wait for it now. And in terms of where it will be available, it's going to be available via the LEAD Network members platform and will be available free of charge for both partner and member organisations. So if you're a member of LEAD, you'll be able to access this. And that's really speaks to the spirit of this work. We need to work together if we all show and demonstrate the supply chain in whatever organisation is a meaningful and fulfilling career destination for women, then we all win.
Very good. Is there any other question or things that the audience wants to ask and that I may have missed in the Q&A, or I mean, as well, you can open your camera and and speak directly to the to our speakers. If not, I think we had quite a very rich dialogue with all of you. So thanks a lot for the openness and going through, you know, every part of either your career or what your company is doing in terms of these best practices. So as you say, Kat, that will be available into the network website. So just that give me the opportunity to remind everyone that you have the opportunity, as you are members, to reach out into this website. In it, you'll find all your fellow members. You can, you know, chat. You can open discussions. You can find all the recording of the webinars. So that's a great way to access all the materials. There's as well an opportunity to join the scorecard. So I think the scorecard really help all of us and it in particular to understand where we are in the journey on gender diversity. So you have the opportunity to participate to this scorecard by emailing this education lead at the bottom that you see here. And that's really show, you know, helping to show the evolution and luckily to show it in the right way. Before we stop, just wanted to we have the opportunity to remind you that we will meet face to face in October. So you all, I hope you get the invitation to book the 12th and 30th of October. In Düsseldorf, it's always a great opportunity to for meeting people, networking, and to hear a lot of great stories through the couple of days. So, if again, have a look at the website, and you will get all this information. And finally, I mean, if there's no other questions, so we'd like you to take a few minutes to rate the quality of the event, and if also you'd like to recommend the Lead Network to friend or colleague. So we'll let you give that feedback. And from our side, I mean, last word, if you want, Claire, Joseph, Kath.
Just thank you for the great questions to keep getting us thinking and talking. So and looking forward to hopefully seeing some of you again.
Yes, thank you very much.
I saw a question in the chat around what might we do once it's published and sharing further successes. Sure. So we will continue to look at, you know, it's not going to be a once and done. We're going to get something out there, but very open to feedback, how we can keep it a live document. So, yeah, echo the others. Thanks for your engagement and the questions today. We're in this together and we can achieve a lot together.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Closing now. Bye-bye.
Thank you, bye.
Thank you, bye-bye.